welcome to the Self-Help Podcast, a weekly no-nonsense guide dedicated to your emotional health and well-being. Presented by entrepreneur Edward Lamb and psychotherapist Sean Orford. For more information, visit liveinthepresent.co.uk.
Okay, it says we're recording, so I think we are recording. Hello, welcome to episode 370 of the Self-Help Podcast. With me, Ed Lamb, I'm a good pal, Sean Orford. How are you, Sean?
I'm groovy and fine. I'm good.
I'm thinking I should have ironed this shirt really before I put it on, but for those watching it on YouTube, yeah, I apologise.
That's the rustic look.
It is. It hasn't been out of the cupboard for a while. All my shirts, like, they haven't been getting much use because I've not been going to any meetings or any swanky nights out or anything like that.
You mean you haven't had the pinstripe suit on and the tie?
No, it's probably the Gucci shoes. Need to check all that stuff out. Yeah, we're talking about being useful today and how to be useful. We'll explain why shortly, but it's going to be an exciting and engaging episode as ever. Sean's written a blog post that you should check out. Well worth reading. Your reading's your thing as well. Still, reading can be quite useful from time to time, I've found.
And yeah. It's weird that how much I've actually been reading over the time that we have been in lockdown, and I've been back into reading stuff, and I've been reading stuff on the tablet a lot, and I find that the screen gets to your eyes after a while, people keep saying to me, "Oh, you need to get a Kindle because you don't get the reflection off the screen." So I don't know. Have you ever used a Kindle?
I have, yeah. I've got one in my drawer somewhere from ages ago, but I don't use it much anymore. You can have mine if you want, to be honest.
I wouldn't mind borrowing it. Just have a go and see what it's like.
So, yeah. I'll dig it out, yeah. I think it still works. Yeah. But yeah, you just hook it up to your Amazon account and off you go.
Yeah,
but yeah, they're cool, quite cool little devices.
I used to have a Sony book reader years ago, but it fell apart. So, yeah.
Oh, yeah. I remember that, actually. Yeah.
How long ago that was? Oh, I can remember just about.
It wasn't that useful over time, hey?
No.
Liveinthepresent.co.uk for all the show notes and links, as ever. What have you been up to, Sean? How's life?
Life is busy as usual, but we're going through this easing of lockdown. So I have a whole load of people that are saying, "Can I come and see you face to face? Come see you face to face." And like, we're not there yet. And I've been setting up things, like I've got my hand cleansing station and stuff like that. So I'm setting it all up so that when we do reopen, people can come.
Is that an air conditioning unit?
One of the problems I have is because, yeah, it is. Yeah, but I wouldn't use it to recirculate when people were here. You know.
Yeah,
it's a heater and an air conditioner. Yeah. So,
cool.
But I think that it's a case of at what point will we consider that it is safe and okay to come and actually be with other people? Right. When are you going to start seeing your customers again face to face?
Oh, I don't know. Really, I've had a couple of outdoor meetings and chats with colleagues and a business partner. Couple of times, which is quite pleasant. Could you do outdoor sessions? Would that be helpful, or is it just not predictable enough for
and the thing is that the things that people are talking about, you know, it's like you could be in a forest in the middle of nowhere. I don't know how appropriate my professional body would see that, you know. I mean, it's quite a hard thing to do, isn't it? You know, especially if you've got people that are getting upset and whooping and wailing.
Who's listening, you know, over
doesn't
there?
Doesn't look good if you're in the forest. Yeah.
Yeah, interesting. But no, I'm okay. I mean, I've had a couple of meetings, just still lots of Zoom and Microsoft Teams discussions, which is fine. Got quite in the hang of it, in the swing of it. We did the Leverhulme summer cycle last summer, September. It's not really our decision, you know. We'll run it if the client wants us to run it, the landowner. So we're just waiting for the nod on that. But that would be September. So we could do it quite easily because it's outdoors and it's, you know, we could space people out quite easily, I'm sure. We'll wait and see. But yeah, I mean, well, that leads into the episode really, because I wanted to talk about the new age of being useful, because there's a lot of talk in the news, obviously, as businesses are getting back to normal-ish, but obviously capacity is down and there's going to be a lot of job losses and a lot of industries and a lot of businesses are going to go under in the next 6 months, a year. It's going to be impossible to continue, which is dreadful, really. But I've seen that the government and the Chancellor's talking right now, I think, about kind of re-energising the economy and kind of building it, trying to, with on our, one eye on building for the future, you know. So obviously I'm interested in the environmental stuff, but it just got me thinking about what it means to be useful in this new age of, we've got this potential to build a whole new economy, you know, in the next couple of years, 5 years.
I think that focusing on that, on those very words you used, it's like lots of people, when the big crash happened in the 30s, lots of people made a lot of money out of it because they started appropriate businesses that met the needs of the people at the time. So although we have a lot of businesses folding and closing and are likely to, there's also the opportunity to regenerate new ways of doing things and new businesses and new ideas, new services for people, if we're awake enough to see it and to grab it and do it. So there is opportunity there.
I mean, I'm sure most people or most business owners at least assume or think that what they give and do for planet Earth is useful. You know, I think a lot obviously about environmental stuff and how a lot of industry isn't compatible with what we need to do in the next 10 to 15 years. But, you know, it's not up to me to decide what's useful and what's not. And, you know, it's tricky. They're tricky conversations to have with people, aren't they, that aren't going to be too open for change.
Yeah. But each of us, I mean, in lockdown, I have tuned into plastic and my dislike of plastic. And everywhere I look, there's plastic. I've got a plastic pen. So my first experiment with that is to stop using plastic products. So I've binned the shampoo and the conditioner and the shower gel. And I've now got bars. I've got hair bar, a conditioner bar, I've got a body bar that came in cardboard boxes. So my next one is to get rid of the toothpaste tubes. And I've got a block of solid toothpaste. And I need to get rid of the plastic toothbrush and try. And I'm going to do my best to eliminate plastic as much as I can from my life.
Very good.
Because I just see so many pictures and so many poor animals whose guts are full of plastic that we just dumped everywhere. You know, it's just so horrible.
I know. And, you know, part of this rush to stem the virus, the tide of the virus, relied on mountains of plastic, single-use PPE, you know, in hospitals.
Yeah.
God. But it is such a handy, useful material, plastic. You've got to take your hat off to it, that it's like, it's an incredible.
I could cope with plastic if we actually had worked out how to get rid of it or recycle it or process it before we keep chucking it out there. You know, if you can conserve it and recycle it, it's a bit like tin cans. You know, if you can turn your tin cans into new tin cans, okay, fair enough. You know, but if you're just going to dump them in holes in the ground, that's just awful. Mm-hmm. You
know? Yeah, it is. But, I mean, there's an industry, isn't it, that needs support and investment, and there's huge disruption to be had there in terms of recycling. I know that our recycling grey bin here on Wirral, you can put certain plastics in. Any kind of plastic bottle can go in your recycling bin on the Wirral.
Yeah.
So, like milk containers or shampoo bottles, they can all go in any grey bin. But then it's still not as sustainable as a cardboard box and a bar of soap, is it, that you used to wash your hair with? Yeah.
Well, I've been doing it for about, I'm just roughly my fourth week now. And I can report that once I got used to the idea you've got to lather something, it's been just as good as using stuff out of tubes and bottles, you know. So
Well, there's an article I'm going to link to, and it's kind of tips on how to make yourself useful, 15 ways to become a better person. And one of them is about, they talk a lot about how change is hard for people, and also that you're better to teach someone than tell someone. So in terms of that plastic stuff, you know, it's there are a lot of people out there thinking, how do we get people en masse to switch away from these things? You know, and that's a useful thing to do at the moment. Mm-hmm. Like telling people to do something doesn't always work, whereas teaching them why they're doing it or why they should do it is more effective, I assume. Is that right?
Yeah. It's doing things with people and not to people. They own it if you do it with them.
Yeah.
So
that's a useful way.
Did you see an article, only caught a bit of it, on the news feed, about someone has made the first cardboard wine bottle? recycled cardboard. Now, I don't know whether they've had to line it with plastic to make it waterproof is the only issue.
Yeah, surely. But maybe it's some kind of recyclable plastic. Yeah. I don't know. I didn't look at the definition of usefulness before I came on. Maybe I should have. But how do you define useful? And are there? I'm assuming that there are benefits to, like, mental health benefits to having a useful role in society, rather than feeling like you're on the fringes or that you're just kind of bumbling along a little bit.
Well, the useful bit to me means that if you do something, or you experience something, or you are something, if the situation is better when you left it than when you arrived, you've just been useful.
Okay.
If the situation is worse off you having been there, you've just been useless. That's the way I see it. And that you can look at that on all different kinds of levels, from emotional to financial to physical to whatever. But to be useful is to affect the situation and other people in a way that leads to a positive outcome. That's usefulness.
Yeah. I was thinking of one of the articles that talks about, it didn't actually mention usefulness. It talked about helpfulness. So yeah. I quite like that idea, because a lot of the work that I do on the design stuff, people will come to me for, you know, advice and stuff. And I'm not always interested necessarily in getting some work from them that's going to pay straight away. So I always try and be helpful, you know, not because I'm thinking further down the line I might make a book out of it. But often that is the case. So, you know, when I'm helpful to people, or when I just offer free advice or some time, you know, 6 months, a year down the line, they call me up and they're, you know, or they've told someone about me, that leads to work a bit down the line. So I quite like that idea of being helpful. And I guess that's quite similar to your role as a therapist, is that you're just constantly trying to be helpful, I guess.
But for me, the first session that I do with people is always free. And that session might, and the reason I do it is because, A, you don't know whether you can work with somebody. They don't know whether they could work with me. I mean, they might look at me and think, bloody hell, I can't work with it. You know? but it's also a case of, it's like doing a triage or an assessment with somebody, because it may be that there's someone else I know that could fit them better than me. You know,
yeah.
And I'd much rather have that session with them and say, why don't you go and do this? That would be much better for you than I would be. So being helpful, right? And yeah, and in that sense, about the money that we earn is the byproduct of the service that we provide. Yeah, if the money becomes the focus, then the service is diminished, I think. You know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm also, I guess it's about problem solving as well, isn't it? Mm-hmm. You know, I'm fighting the war on cars a lot of the time. So I'm constantly thinking about how we can reduce people's reliance on that big block of metal that's set outside the front of their houses, which they are very handy and useful. In certain respects, they are very useful tools for getting us around and for shifting things around.
Mm-hmm.
But they also have like huge negative impacts as well. So I think a lot about how the fella or the woman that's working in Vauxhall's plant along the road now from me, do they consider what they do useful, in that they're still churning out petrol and diesel cars?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Or how do I break in there, and how do I make people understand that what they're doing is not useful? It's like having a negative impact.
But maybe because they are a factory producing something, the only time it hits them is when they start producing the next generation, which would be the electric versions. I mean, how long do you think it is before they say, okay, we cannot produce any more fossil fuel vehicles? How long do you think that'll be?
Well, I mean, by law, I think it's 2032 or 2035. That's the last date that you'll be allowed to sell one. So I assume that 4 or 5 years before that, at least, it will not make much sense to be still churning them out.
But it means that for quite a while after that, there will be fossil fuel vehicles around that will be using fossil fuels. It's like it's only as they die out, I guess.
Indeed. Yeah, I think about the average, your average motor goes along for about 15 years at the moment. So,
right.
Yeah, if you're still producing them in 2030, they're going to be around for quite a bit longer.
Well, so that's 2040, 2050 maybe before the...
Yeah. That's assuming that, like, yeah, the entire economic system hasn't collapsed and, like, oil production is we've got to rely on all the oil and all that, haven't we? Well, we're getting on a bit anyway. But, I mean, I guess, yeah, about problem solving, I think we're all going to have a bit of an awakening in the next year or so or 6 months. Maybe as the furloughing scheme winds down a bit in the UK about what is useful...
So when you say that, what are you seeing? What are you envisioning from that?
Well, I'm not envisioning. Well, I've got lots of visions in my head, but I'm also thinking there are things that are useful, that I see as useful, that are going to be in real trouble that we talked about before we came on. So, you know, the restaurant, the catering industry, which you and I love a good pizza, a good bowl of pasta. Restaurants are going to struggle big time. And there's a whole kind of, it's not just about industry, that it's about kind of community and meeting with friends and family and, you know, enjoying outdoor spaces and our cities. And then there's like the whole arts and culture side, which I know got a bit of cash yesterday announced. But yeah, you know, music venues, theatres, these things in my mind are very useful in terms of, you know, pushing forward and, you know, humanity and cultural stuff. But if there's no space for them and they're struggling, are they really useful? Or I guess it depends on how much we kind of invest in looking after them, isn't it?
But that's interesting, because if useful is what the majority of people want, you know, does that mean that if the majority of people want McDonald's, that should be the next place that we go and bow down at? And that might be true, I don't know. But the fact that the Portrait Gallery in London is there, but how many people, as a percentage of the population, have actually been there? Would they want to go there?
Yeah.
Scary statistic is that in the gallery, someone was telling me the other day that there's only, out of all the thousands of pictures in there, there's only one picture of a black person, a portrait of a black person, only one, and that's of a black woman who has some fame, I think. But that was a real kind of that's odd.
Yeah, we've got a bit of work to do, haven't we, on a few fronts at the moment.
And in a sense, we're talking about being useful. We're coming out of this lockdown, and to me it's like bears coming out of hibernation. You know, you're coming out into the bright light of the spring sun, and it's like we're blinded by it all at the moment. We're trying to get orientated so that we know what we're doing. But there's been a lot of stuff like the Black Lives Matter. And does that mean that we need to be paying more attention to how we do interact socially, economically, and culturally, so that we can actually rebuild or build, maybe for the first time even, a real society of equality? You know, can we do that?
I know. Well, I mean, yeah, I'm seeing that, like, I think there's going to be like 25 years of political and economic progress is going to be crammed into a year or two in the next, you know. I've heard murmurings of universal basic income being brought in, possibly in the UK, so that everyone has X amount of money to live off. So that would be an amazing experiment. I don't know the economics that well as to whether it's possible. I believe it's possible quite easily, actually.
Right.
and the health benefits.
Does that mean that everybody across the board has the same amount of money?
Yeah, everyone gets a universal basic income that can pay for a roof over their head and food. And yeah, from there, it's up to you whether you need to work or you need to get a job.
Oh, wow. It's
a really fascinating. I think it's been trialed in a couple of places around the world and it's gone pretty well.
Right.
People have kept working, you know, they've kept working through their jobs. But over time, maybe we'd kind of think about doing something else. And maybe we'd all take up painting or, I don't know, DIY or who knows what. But so that would be interesting. And also a 4-day work week as well. That's being suggested at the moment, kind of this endless race for productivity and just work.
Is that 4 long days or 4 ordinary days?
I don't know, man. Yeah, I'm not in charge. I think it would be 4 ordinary days.
Right.
Yeah, just scale everything back, you know, take the pressure valve or just take a little bit of the pressure off to just grow relentlessly. Mm. We'll see if anyone's got the guts to do it, because it's quite bold stuff, isn't it?
I think that one of the things we're talking about, this kind of idea of being useful, when we look at the environment and we look at all the stuff that we do, how much of all this do we need? You know, it's like how many pairs of shoes you need, how many handbags do you need, how many of anything do you need? And we're in this kind of trap, which is part of the capitalist system, isn't it? You have to keep people wanting and needing to keep feeding the machine. Mm. But you're suggesting that the machine might be grinding to a halt, so those things might not be there for people to have. You know, it may be do, make, do, and mend. You know, how many people would take their shoes to a cobbler's to have them sold and healed anymore rather than just chuck them away and get a new pair? You
know? Yeah. Well, that's the kind of, you know, we're thinking about, I think about reinvigorating our little local high streets and local corner shops. And that's the type of business that we might need in the next 5 or 10 years, you know, cobblers, a local bakery, and a place where you can go and get all your electronics fixed rather than just buying a new one.
That's a really good one, isn't it? One of the things that really, it's hit me a couple of times over the last few days with people trying to do things, is how places like Apple start to degenerate the older models of their stuff so that people have to buy the new models.
Mm.
Yeah. What a phenomenal waste of resources and time that is, you know. That's crazy to me, absolutely crazy. But it makes economic sense in a capitalist system. I'm starting to sound like a communist here.
we should change the title of this podcast, I think. No, it's all stuff. It's all stuff that we're going to have to face in the next few months and the coming years ahead, one way or another. So, my resource of the week is a podcast, is a TED talk that I go back to over and over again, and it's James Howard Kunstler about suburban sprawl and failed architecture, and it at the end it starts to talk about the environmental crisis that's coming, and this he filmed this 15 years ago. And it's just starting to play out now, and you kind of watch it, you're thinking, blimey, he was right. So I'll link to that in the show notes. But he talks a bit at the end about how we're going to have to figure out ways to be useful in our local communities, you know, because life in the future will be local. You won't be traveling far to work. You won't be jetting off on a plane every month to here, there, and everywhere. You're going to have to figure out what your role in the world, like your useful place is. So, it's a really interesting talk.
If I think about the last few years where I've been working in the Middle East, and for quite a long time, 1 week a month, I'd get on a plane, fly to Doha, and do a week's work and fly back again. You know, and my mileage, my carbon footprint must have really gone through the roof in terms of what I was doing and using, you know.
I'll send you a calculator, actually, and you can work it out, because I was doing some workshops with people last week.
Right.
All the homework was to work out your carbon footprint for the previous 12 months. Pre-virus, I asked people to do it before they were locked in their houses. So I'll send you a link and you can see what it was.
Yeah. Scary.
What's your resource, Sean?
My resource is an article in Huffington Post, which is 10 tips for being the best you can be. And it's good. It's that kind of self-review stuff, which is kind of where I feel that we are in terms of we are coming out of this hibernation. And it does lead people. I'm working with loads of people that are now reviewing and auditing what they're doing and how they're doing it and how they want to work in the future. And a lot of people are going in and they want to renegotiate their work deal with their employer.
Right.
And they don't want to go into the office every day. You know, people are saying, you know, one day a week, 2 days a week will do me. I can do what I need. But I'm so much more, and this is the point, I'm so much more efficient working from home. I get more done. You know, and I'm at home. I like being at home, that kind of stuff. Yeah. Which hopefully reinvigorates families and community.
I hope so, yeah. I mean, I'm enjoying it working home, partly because I've got company. I've got people around. I used to work from home a lot and I would be on my own from, you know, 9 to 5. Mm. But yeah, on Monday, so I did a bit of work with the lads in the morning, let them do their own thing for a bit, did a bit of work, biked along to my parents' house for lunch and sat in the garden, had lunch there, came back and just did another couple of hours of work. It was quite nice. Mm. I was like, oh, I like this.
Yeah. And maybe that's it. I mean, in Sweden, they've been looking at creating 6-hour days rather than 8-hour days. Yeah. And they reckon that people can be as efficient, if not more efficient, in just working 6 hours than doing 8. Because people's efficiency starts to dip the longer they're there.
Okay.
Yeah. So, I mean, there are lots of potential changes around that could change the way that we are socially.
I mean, I guess I would say we haven't got a choice. Things are changing and they are going to change. I mean, they always changed anyway. So if you are the type of person that was not too hot on change, then you're always going to be let down. But I think things are going to accelerate, you know, in the next year, 2 years and beyond. So strap yourselves in. It's going to be fun, isn't it?
Yeah, and from that point of view, from my point of view professionally as an observer of people, I'm excited by observing the changes and what effects they have, because they will be very profound, the effects that are going on.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I know.
Yeah.
All right. I think that's quite interesting. Are you all done? You happy?
Yeah. I've done the podcast, the blog, for the podcast. Yeah.
And you're nearly done on a book, I believe, as well.
Yeah, I've nearly finished my Out of the Blue book, which is the first of a series, which will be good. I'll either finish it this week or next. It's that close.
Oh, cool. Do you need a cover for it? Do you want me to do your cover for it at some point?
Yeah, we'll have some sexy covers.
Send me a little synopsis or something. I can have a think about some designs.
Yeah.
Because I've got nothing else to do, so yeah.
Brilliant. Okay.
All right, Sean, you have a good week.
Yeah, and you take care. You look after yourself.
See you guys.
See you now. Bye.